It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. We're going to talk about the latest news from Microsoft, including no HoloLens 2. They're going to go straight to 3 in 2019. We'll explain why that's a good thing, at least potentially. Differential Sync comes to OneDrive, and it's official. Two versions of Windows 10 this year. The first one's coming soon, and Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for TWiT's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make TWiT even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 506, recorded Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. Foley as a service. Windows Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. An easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Visit itpro.tv/ww and use the code WW30 for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect your business from ransomware and hacker attacks with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free at carbonite.com. Use the offer code Windows to get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Windows every week. Actually, Microsoft in general. You know, Paul Thurrott is here, Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. There's been some conversation in the chat room about our show names. This show, Mac Break Weekly. I mean, these shows, Windows Weekly is 10 years old.
Yep.
And 10 years ago, it was Windows. There wasn't much else to talk about.
Yep.
It's funny how we kind of did start it right on the cusp of that no longer being the case.
Right. I guess
I would like to take credit for that.
Windows and Office Weekly. Now it's Windows, Azure, Hadoop, HoloLens, the cloud, everything weekly. So
you know what, though? A brand is a brand.
I ain't changing the name because I'd have to get new album art.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Plus, it's the artist formerly known as Windows Weekly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think leave it.
But we will cover everything. It's all about Microsoft, just as Mary Jo's column says, allaboutmicrosoft.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You didn't mention this in your show notes, but I just thought I'd throw it in up top. Microsoft has canceled the Patch Tuesday for February entirely.
That's going to be part of my enterprise pick.
Shh. How could that be a pick?
Because I have some more info.
You're cagey. You've got something up your sleeve. All right. Well, good.
Everybody knows the back of the book is the best part of this show, Leo.
Zip it. We're saving the best for last. Actually, I'm excited about HoloLens. And I was telling you before the show that Alex Lindsay shared a video. It turned out to be, as is often the case on social networks these days, it happens almost every week. Somebody shares something on Facebook that's 3 or 4 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, look who died. Dude, he died in 2011. And this was a year-old video about something called Holoportation, or Microsoft calling it Holoportation, which is using HoloLens for video conferencing. And it was I hadn't seen it. I gather you guys had seen it, but it kind of blew me away.
Yeah, that was a cool video.
Yeah, but that's a year ago. Here we are. It's 2017.
And you want to hear something weird about this video?
Yeah.
So the people who created this video, after they made this video and Microsoft was starting to promote this and all, they all left Microsoft as a group. Yeah.
Where'd they go?
So they left with Jeff Hahn. Remember him? The guy who was the creator of Perceptive Pixel that Microsoft bought?
Yeah, the big screen, yeah.
So they all left together and they started this company called Perceptive IO Inc.
Right. That's right.
We think is going to do Holoportation.
Oh, how funny. But Microsoft I think they don't mind, right? Because I don't think they see HoloLens as a platform.
Yeah.
Well, not if it's not on HoloLens.
Oh.
Are they doing this? Yeah. Is this the wrath of Han? Anybody? Is this something they're going to do on HoloLens, or is it something they're doing separate from HoloLens?
See, nobody HoloLens knows. Could be an API and a platform. Here he is with his daughter having a visit with daddy, even though
it's like that scene from Minority Report where he's looking at his long dead family.
Yeah. Well, the best part is you could play it back afterwards
and
look at it, and you can even shrink it down.
Nothing creepy about this.
We're haunted. Hey, this is where I visited my daughter.
My ghost daughter.
From all these different perspectives.
And then he's going to.
And because this is 3D content, we can miniaturize it onto this coffee table and experience it in a more convenient manner.
I would love to do that to my family.
This becomes a magical way of experiencing these live.
Honey, I shrunk the kids. I mean, it's kind of amazing.
We don't know what Perceptive IO is going to do. They've never actually said. They just said they're going to come up with some way of helping people interact using computer vision, applied machine learning, and novel displays. But they haven't actually announced technology or gone public, except that they exist. That's all we know.
It's going to be a big deal if it comes out of some other platform.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Well, the reason it's topical this week is because Microsoft has, in a weird way, accelerated HoloLens. Right?
That's an interesting way to put it.
Slowing down to speed up or something.
Okay.
What happened?
What happened, Mary Jo?
Okay. So this is a Brad Sams scoop. Really good story. Brad found out that Microsoft is not going to come out with version 2 of the HoloLens. And instead, they're jumping from 1, which came out last year, to 3. But version 3 isn't scheduled until 2019.
Right. So it's both later and sooner. Because 3 wouldn't come out so soon if they didn't cancel 2. Isn't that it? Kind of? Sort of?
I had heard dates for 2. At first, I had heard they were trying to get 2 out at the very end of last year, and that it had slipped till the beginning of this year. But I had not heard that they had just tabled version 2 until Brad's story. And then I asked around with my sources and I heard, yes, we tabled version 2.
I just think that the thing that's interesting about this is it's easy from the outside of Microsoft to look at any decision like this and be really critical of it and take it as bad news and all that kind of stuff. I think the reality is that this product wouldn't have been a generational leap and that it was kind of unnecessary and that they can, with the current product, do things like lower prices, for example, if they want to drive usage a little higher. Yeah. And they have all these new devices coming out from partners this year that I think kind of fills the gap. If they weren't going to fix the central issue with HoloLens, which I feel is the field of view, which they weren't, then waiting until V3, I think, makes sense.
Yep. I mean, we didn't know what was supposed to be in version 2. My guess had always been better field of view, lower price. I hadn't actually heard a feature set. I know some people see version 2. I've talked to people who said, I saw it. But they never said anything.
I haven't seen it, but what I heard was the field of view doesn't change. It is lighter weight, better battery life, and less expensive to make, and would be less expensive as a product. But I think they have wiggle room in the current product to lower the price now that it's been over a year or about a year since the first version shipped.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting now to see what happens. Because Microsoft, by the way, has not confirmed the story, unsurprisingly. In fact, their quote was rather amusing that they gave Brad and me. Here's what they said when we asked them about this. Mixed reality is the future of computing, and Microsoft HoloLens is the future and present of mixed reality. Our commitment requires no roadmap. Okay. You've got a roadmap.
Well, that's convenient because the roadmap you did have has been eliminated.
It's been torn up. Right.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a weird quote. It was kind of like, we don't need any stinking roadmaps. We don't need that in HoloLens, right?
Yeah. They do have a roadmap, right? So as long as they haven't publicly committed to such a thing, they can make those kinds of statements, yeah. right? It's the, we'll ship it when it's ready. Actually, it's July 17th, you know, kind of thing. Like, you know, this is always a very, you know, we like to pretend that, like, you know, our software is going to be perfect or whatever.
Right.
I honestly, where HoloLens is right now, I don't see this as a big deal. It's really important that this kind of generation of third-party Windows holographic devices happen. They're not going to leapfrog the existing HoloLens anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, why raise the bar even further? And especially if it's going to be kind of an incremental change, right?
Yeah.
Wait until you can make that big leap. And I think that's a good way to do it.
You know, they're supposedly going to show off those like early developer versions of those tethered headsets that they're working on with people like Acer and Asus and Dell and Lenovo and HP at the Game Developers Conference, which is like a week, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, but I've seen demos of these. I'm just curious, like, what do people want these things for, the tethered headsets?
Yeah. So,
like, HoloLens, feel like I had more of a sense of what Microsoft was trying to accomplish there and kind of, you know, the idea of an untethered standalone device like that. But when you have to tether it to a PC, I'm like, okay, so why would somebody want this?
Yeah, well, for the same reason they would want an Oculus Rift or a Google Daydream, or whatever. Yeah, primarily it's entertainment. I think the problem with those devices is going to be that they will fit kind of nicely in a certain category, price range, etc. They're not going to move the dial on, you know, mixed reality experiences per se. Yeah. They're just going to expand the choices, which is fine. Yeah. But you know, I speaking privately to people from Microsoft about this year. One of the things I heard a couple of times was, you know, mixed reality is a big deal for us, but we know it's not gonna be like the next wearable. It's not the next, you know, smartphone type thing. It's not that big, and it's not gonna explode this year. Mm-hmm. We're just gonna move it forward. And I think the problem with HoloLens is just that it's such a niche device because it's so expensive and requires a level of handholding that I always equate to Windows Server Data Center when that first came out. Remember, mm-hmm. you used to. Mm-hmm. Truck would show up and a bunch of guys in white lab coats would get out and they would put the server in your data center and they would hand configure everything for you. It just requires that kind of a curated, you know, first run experience for most companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's a big divide, I think, between that and the HP, you know, whatever it's called, right. HMD thing.
Right. Two $300 headset, right?
Yeah. Consumer experience, very limited. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the one crazy idea I had when I heard about this is like, maybe they decided to table version 2, not just because it was not meeting the quality bar or the feature set, but also because they really want these tethered headsets to take off because it's going to help sell more PCs.
Yeah.
And that's really the business they're in, right? Is like getting people to buy more PCs.
And if you announce right as this is happening, a second gen headset of your own that is untethered and is, you know, not hugely better, but is better. Yeah. It may make the gap between those products look a little too wide.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They probably decided that there's not going to be any credible competition in 2017. So why rush?
You are smarter than you know. No, I mean that. I you are onto something there. I actually think that HoloLens 2 might have been a response to some competition that never showed up.
Like Magically or Apple's imaginary.
Yeah. And since
AR.
This has never happened, what's the point? Why bother? You don't need to ship the incremental one. We already have something.
Do you think they regret doing announcing it so early? Like, do they lose something by having, you know,
I look at Satya Nadella's ascendancy at Microsoft is a little bit like Steve Jobs at Apple back in 96, 97, when he came in and looked at, like, around the company and said, what do we got? And for some reason, this is something that stuck out for him, that this is the type of thing that in the past would have sat in a back room at Microsoft Research. We would have made a goofy demo video that never turned into a real product. And he looked at that and said, no, let's get this thing moving, right? And we kind of debate whether or not it makes any sense as a product. But honestly, that kind of, like, decisive decision-making I think is really important because HoloLens, like Surface products in some ways, is really about aspirational and about piquing the interests of developers, hardware makers, of customers, and just getting them excited about Microsoft as a provider of technology. You know, this thing as a business is almost non-existent, but I think they knew that going in. I really think this was a calculated play just to make Microsoft more attractive to the outside world, to say we're not like Bell Labs or whatever that was back in the 70s. We are shipping products, and we're going to partner with other companies so they can too.
And the other thing, I'm sure they've said this to you too, Paul, but they now, when you ask them about, you know, how did HoloLens come to be and all, they paint it as a progression from the Kinect. Like they say, oh, this camera technology and the, you know, the way we were developing Kinect, the next step was HoloLens. So they try to paint this now as a progression, right? And whether it is or is, that's kind of revisionist
history. That's
fair.
It's plausible, right? But maybe. And you could look at that as something, you know, in the context of game playing, what would it have taken for that thing to be a viable peripheral for the Xbox One or whatever? Mm. We'd still be waiting for that, right? It's never going to happen. Well, I should say it's never going to happen. It could happen eventually. It wasn't going to happen last year. It's not going to happen this year. Satya Nadella or whoever, I mean, saw this as more than that.
Yeah.
It's also planting a flag. In a way, this is a message internally, too, because once you announce it, you can't not do it.
Yeah. I know.
Is it impossible to think that Nadella might have thought, here's one way to make sure this does happen?
Yes, and they latched it to the Windows 10 train, which I thought was kind of smart. You know, Universal Apps will run in HoloLens, and you're not creating something for an isolated platform. There's a little bit of a safety to this where you can say, well, if this thing doesn't take off, it will run on PCs, it will
Windows
run on phones.
Graphic too. I mean,
we'll run on Windows Holographic, exactly. Yeah. This is not a one-way street. It's not a dead end.
So go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. The other really good thing that Nadella did, when you hear the stories about this, is he looked at it. Microsoft was going to make this a consumer gaming thing, right? He looked at it and said, you know what? Let's make business the first use case for this.
Yes.
Very smart.
And very smart for Microsoft in particular, right?
Right.
Because this is where they see the traction. So it's I think it's important to remember that part of the
market.
And
they may have
too.
Learned a little lesson with the Kinect. I mean,
yes. They did.
I think they learned first.
A couple of lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sold very well at first.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny. The Kinect was part of a wider initiative at Xbox to duplicate the success of the Nintendo Wii, which we've all forgotten about, right? Like that thing soared to huge success for a year and a half, 2 years, and then just dropped off the face of the earth. Microsoft raced to do everything they could to, you know, make little goofy avatars that were just like Nintendo Miis. And, you know, we're still stuck with all the weird
crap,
collateral damage from their, you know, just trying to outdo the Wii. And everyone's forgotten the Wii.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
there's a certain, you know, hubris isn't the right word. But when you're a follower like that, you know, the fallout from that is what you see, you know, the goofy Kinect thing with Xbox One back, you know, three years ago.
Yeah, I think they were kind of signaling last year. I don't think they knew they were going to drop HoloLens V2 last year, but when they started talking about mixed reality instead of augmented reality, the idea of having these VR headsets running Windows Holographic, that was all stuff they started talking about last year. I think they were kind of laying the stage for like, okay, we had this aspirational, super amazing device, and now we're going to broaden that market, right? And that wasn't just enough in and of itself. We want our partners in here too. And we think they can make the VR headsets that we're not going to make. So, I think it's just progression.
They're also eventually going to make the HoloLens style mixed reality devices as well, I think, right? There's no reason HoloLens. Yeah, I think that's the part of the progression you're talking about, right? You have to come in with these $200, $300 devices that run on low-end computers, and you have to come in with these kind of Oculus Rift or HTC Vive-type devices as well. But, I mean, ultimately, Microsoft's big advantage in this space is something it can't keep to itself, right? I mean, you're partnering with all these companies. They're going to want to have access to the holograms. I mean, that's the platform, right? I mean, it seems like we will see, you know, a $1,500 tethered device at some point that will be HoloLens, but from another company, and will work with your PC. I would think.
So why would you make? Why would you make that? Why would somebody
Microsoft
make that?
Or a partner?
Anybody? Because I kind of feel like HoloLens is like the Surface Book, right? Like it's the highest end aspirational device, and everything is for the partners to make and not Microsoft.
Yeah, no, what I'm saying is, in other words, today HoloLens is a $3,000 device. What I'm saying is make that thing for $1,500, make it tethered, make it work with a computer. And that's why, because it's half the price. In other words, you may perceive that there's some market there. And by the way, this is not going to be like, this can't be like a, I almost said K-Pro. This can't be it can't be a low-end like a K-Tel, I think is what I meant. Like a K-Tel company. It has to be a company that wants to do the service and support that would go along with that. Like, in other words, like I said, you know, HoloLens for most companies is like a really curated experience, right? Back in the day with the data center, it was Dell doing that or HP. You could imagine them wanting to have that connection with those enterprise customers and them being the one that goes into those operations and gets them up and running instead of Microsoft. And frankly, I think Microsoft wants that too.
You know, they could. Yeah, but I think if we're looking at 2017, like what's Microsoft's priority in this space, it's getting the partners to build the VR tethered headsets that run Windows Holographic. And however Project Scorpio fits in here, right, with Microsoft, what Microsoft's doing in the strategy. That's it.
You're exactly right. And to be clear about what you just said about Scorpio, I believe what you're referring to is it will have some form of VR capability.
It will, right? Have they ever said that?
Yes and no. So they've never said that it would come with it. They never said what it would be. But the presumption is the capability will be there. How could it not be based on Windows Holographic?
Right.
But
I know.
So I have to know. It's possible that the third-party Windows Holographic headsets we're going to see, you know, starting this month at the game conference, will in fact be compatible with Windows Scorpio, which will be a Windows 10 device of some kind, of course.
Yep.
So there's a lot we don't know, but I think you're exactly right. Yeah.
Will that make me get Scorpio? No.
Yes.
It may make you get one.
We're all getting one, Mary Jo. We're all getting one. Paul's getting
three. You're getting a Scorpio.
Yeah. Yep. But that's, I guess Brad kind of telegraphed this, but that's why when I read his article, I saw it as a good thing, not like they're killing HoloLens 2. I saw it as, and focusing on the next generation.
Yeah, I think you have taken that correctly. And at the time that he published this, I thought, you know, people are going to read this and just going to come away with the wrong attitude about it. As you know, I'm usually a sunnier person than most.
Mr. Optimist.
You are, yes.
No, but I see this as what it is. I don't see this in a negative light. I think they've done the right thing.
Well, I think the one group I would like to hear from are people who've been building apps that they expressly built for the HoloLens.
Yeah.
I'm curious what they think of what just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, it's Windows Holographic, and you can use that across other platforms. But I feel like, you know, when we were at Wartell, they were building things for the HoloLens, right? Like, not for a tethered headset. They were building it for the HoloLens.
Is it better for them to have one hardware platform to focus on and not have to worry about revving this thing every 15 or 18 months?
Maybe.
Right. And then having to account for multiple form factors and all the differences that may occur over that time. I mean, it may be better for those developers.
Maybe.
Not to have to, you know, worry about that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe. But I'm sure they were kind of hoping and waiting for the, you know, bigger field of view, better battery life. And they were like, once that happens, then this is really going to take off. Because Microsoft admitted at the end of last year, they've only sold a few thousand HoloLens. And maybe that was what they expected. Or maybe that even was better than they thought. Who knows? But
I think when you price it that way, that's the expectation, right?
Yeah.
I don't think HoloLens sales are good or bad or indifferent. I think they are what they are because that was the, you know, they wanted this to be a slow rollout. They weren't prepared for this to be bigger than it was.
Yeah.
I really sound like I'm making lemonade there. That sounded terrible as I said that. But I think they did this on purpose is the way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the cheapest version of the HoloLens is $3,000. That's a developer division edition. Yep. And then the $5,000 one is the business edition. Right. It's not for everyone, even though I guess Raf has two.
Most of the vehicles I purchased have cost less than that. Yeah, he owns two of them. He bought two of them.
Why?
He bought them.
Why more than one?
Because he didn't want the one of them to be lonely.
Is he hoping they'll reproduce? HoloLens?
He's really into this stuff. He dismantles them and sees how they work.
One to take apart and one to use.
Sure.
Okay.
It's like that droid getting tortured in Return of the Jedi, you know, one of them screaming in the corner.
What is the collective noun for HoloLens?
Yeah, that's a good question.
A strap of HoloLens? A visor of HoloLens?
We need a word.
A pride of HoloLens.
A pride of HoloLens. I think you could just
move in herds like birds.
I think you could just use any word at all. Yep, apparently, because, you know, a murder of crows. What is it? Why murder? What?
I know. Right.
Yeah. That is a weird one.
Yep. A queasy of HoloLens.
What's a queasy?
Yeah.
It's more than one HoloLens. It's a pack of Quingle lenses. You get a queasy.
I have a Quingle.
A Quingle.
How about a gaggle? A gaggle of HoloLens.
Yep.
Well, geese already gets gaggle. So,
true.
We needed something that's of its own. An orchard, a bivy, a giggle. A giggle of HoloLens. I kind of like that.
Yep.
All right. I think we have it. I'm sure Chris Capicella is taking notes.
He is, I'm sure.
Let's take a break. Give Chris time to finish that thought. And we will a cluster. I like a giggle. I like a giggle
brace,
of HoloLens.
Garth H on Twitter says a brace.
A brace of HoloLens.
A brace. Mm-hmm.
Good.
See, but you already have brace of quail, right? You can't. I don't know. Sure, can you repeat collective nouns?
I think you can. So, for example, if you had a pride of lions, if you wanted to say a pride of Tyrannosaurus Rex, it would probably kind of work.
I wonder what the genesis of all that silliness is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's probably some British kind of pith helmet, but I'm not. I could be wrong. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you're an IT professional, you know how hard it is to get that first job because you got to prove to people you know you can do it, and you don't have any resume, you don't have any experience. That's where the certs come in, and that's why the cert system was created, the A+ and the MCSE and, all of these certifications. That's what they certify. You've got the skills. And lots of people spend lots of money getting those certifications, go to a technical school, spend tens of thousands of dollars, even buying the materials, the books, the study guides and all of that, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And I think it's hard work because it's dry, frankly. I've got a way that's much more fun, a way that will prepare you perfectly for the tests, even let you practice the tests. It's IT Pro TV, an easy and entertaining way to not only get your certs, but once you become an IT professional, to keep up on every conceivable subject. This is, I talk a lot with my kids, my college kids, college-age kids, about the future and about jobs. And I say, be careful what, you study because you got to make sure there's going to be a job. Henry wants to be a journalist. I said, well, I don't think so, my friend. But
sorry.
I know. It's sad.
I should laugh at that. That one hurts.
It's sad. No, I think I did. I encouraged him. However, we do know one thing that is guaranteed, and that's the IT professional. The people who keep the networks running, the people who keep the networks secure, the people who keep the computers operational, those people will have jobs for the long-term future. Opportunities in the tech industry are literally growing faster than in any other job market. And you don't have to go back to school. You don't have to spend thousands or even hundreds of dollars. You can do it at IT Pro TV. They offer 2,000 hours of content. They've got five studios now, and they're doing shows Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 Eastern, and 30 hours at least of new content every single week. You can stream them live, watch them live, as you might watch Twit live. In fact, they were inspired, I think, by Twit. That's what they say. Maybe they're just being nice. Or you can get them on demand, just like Twit, after the fact. They have apps that work with Chromecast, with Roku, Amazon Fire TV, the Apple TV app that's new on your PC, and every possible IT subject, certified information systems security professional, CompTIA's Project Plus or Networking Plus, certified ethical hacker, wouldn't you like to be that? Ethical Hacking version 9, AWS solutions, pen testing, using Wireshark. I mean, it just goes on and on. Transcripts let you follow from start to finish on the written page. And you can use those transcripts to jump to any part of the video, which is great if, you know, you take the practice exams. And by the way, these include the Transcender practice exams free. They're worth $109. So take the exam and you go, well, here's where I'm weak. You can literally jump to that part of that video and refresh your memory. They also have virtual machine labs, which is cool. You don't have to have a Windows server running or even Windows clients. You can do it on a Chromebook if you want with the HTML5 browser. Any HTML5 browser lets you set up a Windows server, lets you set up Windows clients, configure them, mess them up, screw them up if you do. And you will at first. Screw them up. I did. And then you just shut down. You start over. You reboot. I love it. IT Pro TV's clients are everywhere, including some of the best universities in the world. Harvard. The entire IT department at Harvard has a subscription to IT Pro TV. MIT, UCSD, Stanford. Low monthly subscription price. Even less if you buy for a year. It's $57 a month. 2 months free if you buy for a year, $570. There's a no-hassle cancellation policy. And if you, just because you're listening, we've got a really good deal for you. A free 7-day trial so you can see if this is right for you. I think you'll really like it. It's really engagingly presented. And they have a chat room just like we do and everything. I mean, it's really cool. You also get 30% off the life of your account if you go to itpro.tv. That's the website, itpro.tv/WW for Windows Weekly, and use the code WW30. 30% off, 7-day trial. And that's 30% off for the whole, forever. No, not just for the first year. itpro.tv/WW, offer code WW30. A new membership level is coming soon. But if you sign up today, if you're a current premium member, when that new membership level comes out, you'll be granted automatically the highest membership level available. You'll automatically be bumped up at no additional charge. So sign up today. You're locking in that price. itpro.tv/WW, the offer code WW30. Windows Weekly, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Hello. Hello. We were talking yesterday on Mac Break Weekly because Apple acquired a face recognition and authentication company.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about how well Windows Hello works, the face recognition in it. Mm-hmm. I haven't signed into my Windows machines in ages. I just, you know, hi. And I love it. There's OneDrive news. Haven't had any of that in a while. What's new?
There's been a very highly requested feature for OneDrive, differential sync, which means you only sync the parts of files that change and not entire files when you sync. Yep. It's been a feature requested by users since at least 2014. And we know now when we are finally going to get it in OneDrive, which is next calendar quarter, Q2, 2017. Ta-da! Finally!
This kills me. Microsoft solved differential sync in 2003. They had this in Windows Server.
Well, rsync's been around forever
for branch servers.
Unix, and that's the same thing.
This is a good thing.
It's crazy.
It's a little harder to do, I think, with a cloud service.
That's somebody from Microsoft came into my Twitter feed yesterday and said, you know, everybody wants to say finally, but do you guys know how hard it is to actually do this?
Yeah.
You know what?
It's hard.
I don't care how hard it is. That's what you do for a living. you know.
Now, the funny part about this was a year ago, Microsoft listed differential sync on a OneDrive roadmap that they had and said, we're committed to delivering this feature, but we don't have a time frame when we're going to. At Ignite, they did a new roadmap and it was gone off the roadmap, like not even on the roadmap anymore. I was like, I didn't notice it at the time, but I was like, oh, yeah, it's off. And then a new roadmap came out in January for OneDrive, and suddenly it's back. And it even has a date now.
So they must have had a big announcement around that because it's such big news.
They did not. They did not. They just kind of quietly snuck it out there on the roadmap and said, hey, Q2, there it is. So Some people have been asking me, is this the replacement for placeholders? It is not. This is something different. The thing that Microsoft keeps talking about, that they're going to have some kind of a OneDrive or placeholder replacement, they showed a sneak peek of that at the Ignite show last fall, and they know that it's a big request, and they hinted that we're going to hear about that at Build this year. And that makes me think probably a Redstone 3 feature, so probably not till fall for that one.
Yeah,
whatever.
It makes sense to tie it right to some release of Windows 10.
It does. Yep. But this is differential sync, still something people want both on the business side and the consumer side. If you look at the roadmap slide that I put up on my site, they have a whole bunch of other features that they are saying Q2. A lot of them around uploading camera roll to OneDrive, which I guess is still technically in preview at this point. So I guess it'll be GA. smart photos, including optical character recognition and whiteboard cleanup. I think that also is in preview as well. Auto tagging of photos, a whole bunch of changes around sharing controls, like new shared with me and shared by me. There are a lot of other things coming, but the one that people were really asking about was differential sync. And now we know.
Semi-related to this, you might have seen, I tweeted this the other day. I got a Dutch language notification from OneNote, which is synced through OneDrive, right? Saying that some notebook had been updated that is shared with me. So naturally, I went in to see what was shared with me so I could get rid of this. And when I didn't find it, I thought, oh, great, there's some permissions problem. Like these people in the Netherlands or whatever, or maybe it was Dutch or Danish. I don't remember. Swedish. Actually, it was Swedish. I'm sorry. Anyway, one of those Nordic places. There's some cross-linking going on up in the cloud, and I'm getting notifications for someone else's notebooks, and that's not good. Mm-hmm. So I tweeted about it, and Microsoft contacted me, and they like four people from Microsoft going back and forth on it. And I deleted the emails. I couldn't even forward them the emails. They asked me for some information about my account so they could look it up. And then you do that thing like we all do. You're offline. You're kind of laying in bed and thinking about nothing. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, wait a minute. I have at least five Microsoft accounts. I only looked at one of them, but all of my email goes through one account. So it would have been collected. Like this could have gone to a different account. Sure enough, I did one podcast with these guys from Sweden, and they shared their notebook with me. And for some reason, even though they've been updating it all year long, I just got a notification about it. And so that's all it was. Weird. It wasn't it was my mistake. Yeah.
Sync is hard.
Yes, that's right. Yes, right. And here I am complaining about differential sync. I can't even handle multiple Microsoft accounts.
The whole point of differential sync is merely that it saves time, right? You don't have to upload the entire file, just whatever was changed.
Right. Sure. If you're on a limited bandwidth connection, also bandwidth. But
time and
that's
bandwidth.
It.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And you can imagine actually how hard it might be, especially given how hard sync is in general.
By the way, with regards to OneDrive, I mean, one of the things that's changed dramatically for me over the past 12 months-ish is that OneDrive has become a lot more reliable. And it works better, and I don't get a lot of the sync issues I used to get. And I last year, like mid-year-ish, I was basically plotting a move away from OneDrive. Mm. And for much of the past year, I've been using both Dropbox and OneDrive for files, and I kind of arbitrarily split what's where and all that kind of stuff. But OneDrive has gotten a lot better, and so I've actually basically moved back to just purely OneDrive. And so But the one thing that is still slow, and maybe this factors into the differential sync thing, is if I do a lot of, you kind of bring up a new PC, I get like review computers in, I sign into all my stuff. The initial sync on OneDrive is very slow. And it doesn't matter how little of OneDrive I'm syncing, because I really, because of the placeholders issue, I've kind of restructured the storage in OneDrive. And I don't sync a lot of stuff. It's just too time consuming. But once that initial sync is over, it's not like it takes 2 days. It takes some number of hours or whatever. But once that's done, it's great. OneDrive actually works pretty great.
Yeah. You know what I have? And it's my own fault that I have this. I have two different Microsoft accounts with two different OneDrives.
Right.
And
That's not unusual. Always, a lot of people have business and personal.
Well, it's always so confusing to me. Like, where is something like that I'm trying to sync? And I'm like, is it in this OneDrive? Is it in this OneDrive?
I'm going to make a guess. Are these both consumer accounts?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's actually hell. Like you,
it's total hell.
You can't sync part of both of those to one computer, which would be awesome.
No, you can't. You can't.
Right, and that would be. And I'm positive they do this on purpose, because that would be the most obvious tip of all mankind, which is circumvent Microsoft storage baloney limits by syncing five different accounts. Yeah. You know, and then you could put like videos in this one and photos in this one. You know,
I didn't do it for that reason.
No, I know. Of course.
Yeah. I did it because I had one from a long time ago that I never moved over to the other one. And then suddenly I have those two OneDrives, plus I have a business OneDrive that I don't use, basically. Right.
And by the way, you could also do something really silly. And please, dear God, do not ever do this, which is you have a commercial Office 365 account. And then you configure that as a consumer Microsoft account. Do not ever, 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 ever do that. It's the biggest mistake you will ever make, where you have one email address for two different OneDrives.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yikes.
Yep. It's possible. I'm doing it. Don't do that.
How would you even do that? How would you even set that up? Don't tell us, because then people will do it. But
it's awful. No, it's easy to do. It's like you can make any account a Microsoft account, right? It doesn't have to be a Hotmail account. Sure. That's why. And by the way, the real issue here isn't even the stuff that makes it bad for me. It's imagine you work at XYZ Corporation, and XYZ Corporation is either built on Azure or Active Directory. It doesn't matter. It's a work account. It's the type of thing where you could get Office 365 associated with that account. You could log in at Office 365 account with your work account. And then you're like, well, make it a Microsoft account too. Well, guess what? You just lost your job. Now what? You know,
yeah,
it's not that you lose your consumer account. You don't. But you can never get email through it, right, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of problems there. There's also the issue where you can sign into into Windows 10 with using a work account or a consumer Microsoft account. And that's another can of worms. It gets really ugly really quick.
Yeah. I don't know how to fix mine either. Like now I'm like, what do I do now?
So what you mean, in other words, you have some files here and some files here.
Kill one Microsoft account?
Well, you could just not use one. So one thing you could do is find if you want to just copy the files over, depending on how many there are, how complicated it is, you could just download them and upload them. But you could just use a third-party utility that allows you to connect to multiple accounts or a third-party utility to connect to one and then the normal OneDrive that you have in Windows 10 for the other, and just drag and drop. You could do that kind of thing.
Hmm.
Poor Mary Jo.
It all sounds like a lot of work. Yeah.
I think this is a really common problem, but not just specifically OneDrive problem, but very common problem. I hear from people all the time. I have multiple accounts of some kind or another. Multiple Microsoft accounts or Apple accounts or multiple Dropbox. And it's just a mess. Yeah. It's a mess. It's an easy thing to do by accident.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible thing to recover from.
Let me blow your mind now. Because you can also have aliases.
I
know. Yeah.
So you could access the same OneDrive account from multiple email addresses.
I think, though,
luckily,
you could, Mary Jo, just take an afternoon off and fix it all.
Fix it. Yeah. It would take me a whole day.
You just put up with it at this point because it's too much trouble. And it's like, well, I'll put up with it. But it's like this. It's like water torture. It's just this drip, drip, drip. A lot of computer issues are like that, where it's not rise to the level of I got to fix this now. But at the same time, you forget that over a period of time, it really is like this. It could be killing you with stress because it's just drip, drip, drip.
I know.
You have literally described our careers.
It is. me too.
Yeah.
I have Windows 7, right? I have Windows 7. I have Android. I have Windows 10, right? And I'm always saving things in different places and different times. And then I'm like, where did I put that? Which OneDrive did I put that in? You know? And it's like, oh, man.
You could fix it.
I know. I waste a ton of time just having to think that through. So it would... makes sense to just do it.
We got to, there's got to be, we should make a national day of computer repair or something.
Yeah.
Where everybody says, we just, you know, you get a paid day off from work.
That's right. Right.
And everybody, says, these are the three things I'm going to fix.
It would be like the Purge, except it would be killing tech problems, not killing people.
It could be the day after Christmas, you know, the new boxing
day. Well,
this
is, I mean, related to this is what a very common question. I'm sure Mary Jo has gotten this is, you know, is there a way to consolidate Microsoft accounts? In other words, you have two Microsoft accounts. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just say, I'm going to merge these two things and here's the one I'm going to choose as the final endpoint. And if the stuff over here, just bring it over here. Yeah. It could happen in the cloud, so it could be instantaneous. That would be wonderful. I think I first asked Microsoft this question like 10 years ago. No, it doesn't exist. They're aware of it. But I think like the differential issue we're talking about earlier, differential sync, it's a hard computer science problem.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They know about it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Jeff Jarvis every Wednesday complains about Google not supporting Google for Work accounts and all of the...
Please don't get me started. That drives me insane. I literally have to use my old Gmail account to use Project Fi on a phone that is otherwise all my Google Work account.
Right.
It makes me crazy.
That's really not our fault. That's Google not giving you the capability to do that.
Yeah, they'll get there like 17 months
from
now. They've
said that for years. They know this is a problem very well.
No, but every once in a while, they'll eke out like one feature. It's like, hey, remember when we introduced Google Calendar? Well, it's available on your Google account now.
They just updated Google Voice. It's like you ignore it for 3 years and then add a feature? Yeah. You got an intern this week? What happened? It's very strange. So it's not fully our fault. The companies do this to us too.
I hesitate to mention this, but Pete Gundam mentions on Twitter. Regarding OneDrive, this is true.
Yes.
You can share with yourself. So in other words, from one account, you could share it with your other account. Mm. Now, of course, you'd have to do this in the web, but I suppose this would allow you from the cloud. I've never tried this. This is actually not a bad idea. Share what you want over on the second account from the first account, and then from the web, access that and see if you can copy it. Because it is shared with you, and that may be a nearly instantaneous cloud transfer. That's not a bad idea.
Hmm. Sounds worth a try.
Yep, that's a good idea. Okay. And he also, this doesn't solve your problem, but the UWP version of the OneDrive app does allow you to configure multiple accounts. I think he means consumer accounts. Because you can configure multiple accounts.
And this is why we don't have incremental synchronization. Right there.
Sure. Well, no, I mean, the sheer number of permutations of things that one could do with this stuff is crazy. And I think this is a big part of the problem, too.
Yep.
Windows 10. It's not just for breakfast anymore. What is going on with Windows 10? Anything?
Yeah, well, what's not going on with Windows 10 is new insider builds.
Really?
Which is nice because we get a little bit of a break. I think I don't know why I think this, but we believe that March is kind of the RTM timeframe for Windows 10, which, of course, we're not allowed to say, and that April will be the release date, but it's late February. I think we're winding down. I think things slow down. Okay, fine. But there is stuff going on with Windows 10. And the big thing for me, and it's funny how this kind of all came together over the past week for me, is that back in January, Microsoft announced they were going to make changes to the way it handles privacy, both on the web through a privacy dashboard, which is just an extension of something they already had on the Microsoft account website, and in Windows 10, but only in Windows 10 setup, meaning that when you first set up Windows 10, either with a new computer or because you blew it away and reinstalled from scratch, you go through setup, and today what you have is this express settings step where you can choose express settings or you can do more of a custom settings and then you have to manually make choices. And they're getting rid of that and they're replacing it with a privacy screen that has, I think, five or six options that you can kind of select that are related to privacy. And so, you know, this sounds like a good idea. I mean, conceptually, this doesn't seem like a problem. However, what we've learned since then is this was driven by regulatory action, primarily in Europe. I think Switzerland and the EU separately both complained to Microsoft that Windows 10 is a privacy nightmare, which, by the way, I don't agree with, but whatever, and that they needed to make changes. And so this was their solution. So earlier this month, we got the first build on the Insider Preview program that allowed us to see these changes in setup. And so, of course, I went through setup a couple of times to see what this was like. And the way I describe this is it's privacy theater. It doesn't change anything. The truth is, if you care about privacy and you're concerned that Microsoft is collecting all this information for you, this screen in setup doesn't do anything. You still need to install Windows 10, get into Windows 10, and then find all the places in the Windows 10 settings app that are related to privacy and tune them or configure them however you want them. So that was what we had to do in 2015. It's what we had to do last year. It's what we're going to have to do in the creators update. So, you know, this thing is, it's pointless, which, by the way, is exactly what the EU said, because they looked at it and said, this doesn't do anything. So now we're in some kind of a weird, gray area, because this thing is almost complete. They're getting ready to ship it. The EU has said no. No one has threatened antitrust action yet, but we obviously have that dark memory lurking in the background. And so this is a weird thing. I really don't think that Windows 10 actually, like, realistically, real world has any actual privacy issues. You can turn off the stuff that you won't like if you want to. You do have to find it. I know that's a little bit of a problem. But now we've got this government that is going to impact the design of Windows again. And it kind of bugs me. But the problem is this kind of privacy, whether you think it's FUD or real or whatever, it doesn't really matter. The fact remains that the perception of this is bad enough that it has triggered Microsoft now to make changes to Windows. And what that says to me is they've already lost this battle. Like, they want to collect data for good reasons, telemetry and so forth, and, you know, improve the product and all that kind of stuff. But now they're going to have to make major concessions. And we may get to a point where one of the primary benefits of Windows 10, which, you know, among other things are things like, you know, it's always kept up to date and so forth, are, you know, we're all helping each other. It's like a community where we're the experiences that our computers and we have with our computers is impacting Microsoft's understanding of how well this thing works. And I think what we're going to get is a system where people are just going to be able to turn it off, you know, and congratulations. You know, it's almost like if they had listened to the complaints in July 2015, we would never have gotten to this point. But I think with Windows 10, they kind of push and push and push. And now the people who were complaining about this stuff back two summers ago, or, you know, a summer and a half ago, whatever, however we say it, a year and a half ago, are going to win the day, you know, whether they have a point or not.
I think the problem was, I remember back when they first talked about the changes they made in privacy settings, they were saying, well, nobody cares on phones, right? So why can't we do it on PCs? It's just all the same group of things.
Yeah,
that was the logic, right? And it's, well, like, this is why, this is how we keep your things up to date, and this is how we gather information and how we know where you are, so that we can give you, you know, better ads and better recommendations.
We know people love this because it happens to billions of devices every day.
Yep. Right.
By the way, that's another issue, and I don't want to get too far afield here, but just, you know, the EU is as a the regulatory parts of the EU are top heavy, shall we say.
Yeah.
And there, it's a ponderous, slow moving, you know, entity coming down hard on Microsoft in this case. It's weird because out in the world, what we have are literally several billions of phones, which are doing this exact thing, which in fact probably have worse privacy violations. And what they're coming down on are the several hundred million Windows 10 installs out in the world. It's a smaller audience. Like, if they're really concerned about privacy, they're going after the dumbest group. Like, what they should be doing is going after Android and iOS. You know, that's the stuff. iOS actually probably doesn't do a bad job of this, but they, you know, this is not the big audience of devices that are taking your private information and doing stuff with it. Mm-hmm. And here we are. We're getting,
I know.
The band,
I wonder what's
going
to happen. So what's going to happen now, right?
They're going to have to change it again. they're going to have to make it dumber, you know? The goofy thing about this, too, by the way, is if you go and look at Windows 10 setup today and see what choices Microsoft makes for you in Express Setup, understand that your chance to change any of that is now gone, because every setup is an Express Setup with the exception of the privacy controls. So all that other stuff, you don't have that choice anymore. Mm. You still have so much to do. If you care about how your computer is interacting with the world and, you know, what your privacy controls are, you still have to, after you install Windows 10, spend a significant amount of time, you know, spelunking around the settings app, looking for all the stupid things you want to turn off. Those things used to all be in setup, but now they're gone because people complain about privacy. No, it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm curious what the next thing will be. Like, will Microsoft then make a few more cosmetic changes and then see how, if that appeases people? Will they actually do something legal against Microsoft? Right. Like, take legal action? Right. I don't know.
You're right. That's a good question. I mean, I think we're going to play this little game for a few years, and I think you can cue the Benny Hill music at any time, and it's just going to be this round robin thing. Like, they're going to complain. Microsoft will, you know, push back as much as they can, and then they'll make a little change, and it won't do anything. But anyway, I'm sorry. Let me just repeat, because I just want to be clear about what I'm saying here. The privacy changes they've done will do nothing to protect your privacy. However, because they have enacted these changes, you now have a lot more manual configuration to do of Windows 10 because you don't have an Express Setup option anymore. Congratulations. Wow. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really annoying, actually.
It's unbelievable.
I always pick Express Setup. I know what I'm losing. I know what I'm losing. I don't care.
Well, by the way, okay. If you always click Express Setup, then you're fine because that's all being applied for you. You can just click past the privacy screen and you'll be fine.
Okay. Just click past it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's still there. It's just not an explicit button.
It is the only choice now.
Oh, it's the only choice.
So in other words, if you chose a custom setup before,
which you would
have a few privacy options and you would have all these other options.
Right.
Now, every setup is an Express Setup except for the privacy things. And now you have a few more privacy options you can configure. But still, it's not all of them. And if you're one of those people who says, nope, I'm not sending any telemetry data, I don't want custom ads, I don't want any of that stuff, you get a lot of work to do because there's a bunch of settings in that settings app that you still have to go in after the fact and change. And that's why the EU is complaining, because like me, they've looked at this new thing and said, no, this doesn't solve the problem, because it doesn't.
Right. I'm confused, but that's my normal situation.
Just keep doing Express settings.
Okay. Good. I don't have to worry.
Yeah. Okay. If you do Express settings, you don't have to worry. That's true.
Okay. Two updates this year. I asked you this question last week, I think. Like, what is going to be the normal for us?
Yeah, and so I'm curious what you think about this, Mary Jo, because Brad wrote this and every other site wrote something about this.
Yeah.
We knew this, didn't we? Okay.
No, we already knew it.
Yeah.
So Microsoft never, up till last summer, I think it was, had never said there'll be Redstone 2 and 3 in 2017. But then they published a TechNet article that said that, basically. They've gone at the Ignite Australia show and said it again. And so people are like, oh, they said it. They actually said it. Okay. Well, they already said it.
They were very clear that this was happening. No?
So what they've always said is our goal is to have 2 to 3 feature updates for Windows 10 every year. Last year they only had one.
About RS3 and we knew it was coming late in 2017.
Yeah, we knew because they tipped their hand in a TechNet article, but our sources have told us this for a couple of years, I think, or at least a year plus. So news.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's now official.
It's no longer an alternate fact.
I thought it was official last August.
I did too. I did too. I really did.
All right, yeah. So spring and fall now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
It only makes sense.
That was the original goal last year, too. Remember? Yeah. At first, they were hoping to have 2 updates last year, spring and fall. Right. And instead, it turned into summer and no spring or fall. Right. So.
And I'm sure they reserve the right to do that still.
Yeah, I think so.
We talked about dynamic lock as one of the new features in creator's update, and now more details emerging.
Yeah, and it's even scarier than you think. So you should read the article. Raphael did this, and I had talked to him when Microsoft announced this. We were talking privately, and I said, I really need to understand how this works, because when I tested it, I couldn't figure out how to determine which of the devices it was using, and if I left with one but left the other, would it work? And it didn't really work consistently. It's something that's kind of hard to explain. And so he broke into it and looked at it, and it is just as much of a mess as it seems to be when you use it. He did come out and uncover some good stuff. This technology is known internally as Windows Goodbye, which is pretty funny because they have Windows.
Well, they have Hello. We should explain what dynamic lock is. If you get up and leave, it will lock for you.
Right.
And, you know, there is. We just yesterday talked on Security Now about an exploit, even with the screen locked, that allows you to look at the contents of the clipboard. Using accessibility, you can actually get the narrator to speak the contents of the clipboard without unlocking the computer.
Huh.
Right.
But it's still a good idea when you get up to lock. And, of course, Windows key L, which you talked about last week, is a pretty straightforward idea. But even then, people forget.
Oh, of course.
This is an enterprise feature.
Given where we are in the cycle and given how terrible this works right now, it would not surprise me to discover that dynamic lock does not make the cut for the creator's update. So we'll see. I was really looking forward to a next build, which we expected to get last week. And now I think they've said we wouldn't get a build this week until Friday at the earliest, in which case we might not get a build this week either. And we'll see, because to me, if dynamic lock is in this next build, it's going to make or break the feature. And if it's not in there, that's all you need to know right there. So Raphael has uncovered some code indicating that there is the possibility through possibility or additional UI to configure which device handles it and so forth. And so there's a lot of improvements that can happen. But as it's implemented in this initial build that we've seen it in, which was my discovery at the time too, it's so flaky as to be unworkable. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So obviously, the number of people using the Windows Insider builds is fairly small compared to the wider user base. It's something, you know, we're testing it and all that. I do not rely on this feature for now.
Okay. Windows key L.
Yes, is your friend. That's right.
Mail and calendar are being updated.
Yeah, so 10 seconds before you called me on Skype today, Microsoft announced a major update to the mail and calendar app for Windows 10. And they're bundled together it's two apps in the UI, obviously, but just like it was the case on Windows Phone before it, it's actually one app bundle because they share so much code. And so they announced a bunch of new features. By the way, isn't Terry Myerson looking great in that photo?
Is that him?
not only is he getting thinner, but now he's getting younger.
He's going back in time.
But it kind of looks like him. It's funny. Yeah, there you go. So we had seen Focus Inbox in previous builds, but it wasn't available to most people. That's generally available now. That's a feature that's been available in other Outlook clients. They've added some other new features to both these apps. And basically, kind of in an attempt to catch them up with things we've seen released on Office 2016 in the past, Outlook on the web in various capacities, and also the Outlook mobile apps too. So, for example, the at mentions feature, where you're writing an email and you type, you know, at sign like you do on Twitter, and then you get like a drop-down list of potential people that autofills as you type, allows you to add those people to the email message and create sort of a to-do kind of item, because those things are emphasized, especially in Microsoft email clients, which is kind of a neat feature. That arrived in Outlook 2016 last July. And so a lot of this stuff has been a long time coming. You know, interesting calendar support, the mobile apps have had that for a long time too. So it's a nice update though. And I think a symbol of the work that's occurring behind the scenes to bring all of Microsoft's many email clients, whether they're on, you know, the PC or mobile or the web, closer together in terms of functionality. So
do you ever use at mentions? I've never used them.
No, and I never will.
No.
No, but here's one nicety. Say you were sending a group email and you remembered most of the people. And as you're typing, you want to say something like, hey, Mary Jo, I'd like you to look at this thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. You could type, hey, @, and then you start typing Mary. And then not only does it's a nice inline way to reference you, but it adds you to the to list as well. So it's kind of handy in that way. But I look at this as kind of a corporate feature. I think this is going to be mostly used by teams, you know, the types
right. When you have a big distribution list,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a nice way to bring up those people. Because, you know, mm-hmm. the way we type emails now is very monolithic. You go to two and you're like, okay, who has to get this email? Like Mary Jo has to get it. Leo has to get it. Alex has to get it. What's that guy's name? You know, you spend all that time, yeah. you know, doing that kind of thing. And this allows you to do it more naturally in the flow of the email, I guess. But no, I'll never use this feature.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this means, but I like the title. The biggest fear of Microsoft enthusiasts just came true.
I'm referring, of course, to the iPad Pro app. The iPad advertisement. I think there are four new ones. Three of them highlight features that are unique to the iPad Pro. One of them mentions Microsoft Word. And so this is kind of tough for the Microsoft enthusiasts, because when Microsoft first announced Office for iPhone, you know, several years ago now, and then subsequently has made versions for the iPad and the iPad Pro as well. And the iPad Pro version supports features like Apple Pen supports. You can write documents and stuff. This is a tough one for the Microsoft guy, right? I mean, and now that Apple is using that fact against Microsoft, in a way, right, against the PC, essentially. This is the thing we were all kind of worried about, right? And the people who are kind of the diehard Microsoft types, this is what they've been complaining about all along, you know, that they kind of long for the days of the, if not Windows only, then Windows first, Windows best kind of strategy. And this is what happens when you put your best features on other platforms, too. It negates the differentiation you might have on your own platform.
Ed Bott was giving those ads a hard time on Twit this week, because apparently they hired actors instead of the actual tweet people. You got a guy holding up his tweet. And then
Leo, actually, I can explain that. If Microsoft made that ad, they would use the real people.
Yeah.
But because Apple made it, those people are not pretty enough.
No, or diverse enough. So right. They've diversified them. They kept the tweet, but changed the profile picture. Well, you know, it makes sense. You're going to hire actors to do it. But
the ads are interesting on two levels, aside from what I just mentioned. One is that they harken back to those I'm a Mac ads, right?
Which, yeah, that's what he said too, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly do. But I will say, having watched them, I don't get the same vibe I got from I'm a Mac, I'm a PC, because what they're saying is basically true. Right? Like, in other words, you could come up with ads that would say, well, yeah, but you know, this is also true of the PC where it's better. But the things they're bringing up are true. I mean, the big problem I had with the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads is a lot of those things were complete baloney. Like,
right.
They were just really working off of the preconceived notions that people have about Macs or PCs, when in fact a lot of that stuff wasn't even true. And I had a big problem with that kind of false advertising aspect of it. But I look at these ads and, you know, honestly, they're nice. They're fine. They're selling a product. It's fine. I mean, they're not objectionable in any way. You know, aside from the Appleness. That's inherent to them.
I think this next one should be really Mary Jo Foley.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Something about Microsoft trying a new tech with healthcare.
Right. So you guys probably remember this.
Oh,
like,
my goodness.
About a decade. Oh,
rub your nose.
What's happening?
Is there a shadow?
No, it's just some weird pixelation.
It's some weird. It's like a weird blotchiness that makes it look like your nose was black. Like it's on your
black?
Hand.
Black?
No, it's on your hand.
Yeah, it's wow. So strange.
It's dusty in here, but not that dusty.
No. It's like a VR effect.
Yeah.
Am I still getting better?
But I've never seen Skype do that. That was really interesting.
I thought she was going to say something about your dog Toto too for a second.
Your dog too.
I'm clicking my heels three times.
She's home. I'm sorry. Okay. What's this healthcare thing here?
Okay, so about a decade ago, Microsoft had this idea that they were really going to attack the healthcare market. They bought a bunch of healthcare companies. Do you guys remember this? They bought a company called Azixi. They bought a couple other companies. Cention. Yeah, Cention was another. They even did a joint venture with GE Healthcare, and they called it Caradigm. So they were like really spending a ton of money to become a big player in the healthcare technology market.
Was this when they had the Microsoft Health page, or was this more in the band era?
This even before the band.
Yeah.
This was like a decade ago.
Both Microsoft and Google had like these health databases, right?
Yep. Right. They were both going head to head in this idea that they would be really big players in tech healthcare. So then Microsoft suddenly just sold everything off, right? They decided, nope, we're not going to do that. We're selling off all the companies we bought. We're getting rid of the people who were affiliated with those companies. And then this week they came back and said, okay, we're going to come back at the healthcare market again, but in a different way this time. So the way they're doing it now is they're creating a new part of their AI research group that they're calling Healthcare Next. And that group is going to partner with hospitals and different medical entities on all kinds of mostly AI-inspired health projects. So instead of trying to be the healthcare provider, Microsoft's going to partner with other companies and research hospitals and such who are actually healthcare providers. But they are going to work with them together to do these AI projects. And they listed a few of them. They talked about a new Health Vault's Insights research project. So Health Vault is this patient record system that Microsoft built that they never did get rid of. So now they're going to create that as more of an analytics kind of a spin on that for healthcare. They've got Project Inner Eye, which is about radiotherapy. They've got I didn't know they had this, but an AI health chat bot. So they've got a whole bunch of projects like this now that is the new way that they're going to focus on healthcare, which I think makes a lot more sense than Microsoft going out, buying all these healthcare companies and hiring doctors. So that's their new tack with this.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's weird that both Microsoft and Google got out of the business. Like,
they did.
This was like going to be the next big thing. And I think it had to do with electronic medical records. And then they realized, crikey, the privacy issues and the security issues are out of control here. There's HIPAA.
Yeah. You know, they did keep their patient record system, but they limited it to sharing records.
Right,
professionals.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the one thing they didn't mention in this, which is interesting, is Microsoft does have another product called the Microsoft Health Service, which is something that when they discontinued the band work, they said, don't worry, we're not totally getting out of this. We're going to still have a service for health and fitness insights for consumers and businesses. But they didn't mention that in this post. So I don't know if they're just holding that back till they're ready or if something is going on with Microsoft Health. If anyone knows, we'd like to know. So send tips in. Yeah, so that's what they're doing in health now.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Azure?
Yep, quick note on Azure. Microsoft, as of this week, is up to 34 regions for Azure worldwide, which they say is more than Amazon and Google combined. That they have much broader global coverage. The two new regions they added are in Korea, and both of them provide for local data residency. So that's good for people who want to keep their data in the country. But interesting just to see how broad Azure is scaling and how quickly they're scaling. Because they came into the market, as we talked about last week, 7 years after Amazon, roughly. And now they're up to 34 regions. So they're putting a lot of money into
Azure. I love this competition. This is great for us, right?
It's pretty cool. Right, yeah. Yep. A lot of competition, hopefully keeping prices down and giving people more options for the cloud.
Yep. And finally, Kubernetes.
Kubernetes. Not, as Paul put in the show notes, the name of the diet that he is on.
That
is not Kubernetes.
It's a low-carb cloud service.
No, Kubernetes is the name of a cloud orchestration service that Google originally built and then they open sourced. And 2 years ago, Microsoft said they were going to do some work with Google around Kubernetes and get involved in that space. So they actually did end up doing quite a bit of work. And this week, they made Kubernetes available on the Azure Container Service in their own cloud. So Microsoft now has Kubernetes on their cloud. They also talked about having a preview of Windows Server containers with Kubernetes for people who are using the Azure Container Service. That's now available too. So what's interesting here is Microsoft's been doing a lot with Docker, and they've got a lot of work they've done with Docker Swarm, which is kind of the competitor to Kubernetes. And so now they have, you can have a choice when you're using Azure. You can use as your orchestration service Docker Swarm or Kubernetes. I think they've got one other one too, but I'm drawing a blank on what that is. Paul?
Thorant.
Nice.
I was just seeing if he was awake.
Yep. It's
ketoacidosis. Your voice did jolt me a bit there.
He's like, oh, it's like you asking me an Xbox question. I know.
Paul?
Yep. Is that spotlight so bright for everybody? Is it warm in here?
So those, they have those two. It's interesting for people who are big into the container space, which a lot of developers are these days, that Microsoft's really beefing up what you can do with containers and being a good player in the open source world, because both Kubernetes and the Azure Container Service are open source. So as I called it in my post, it's a open source love fest for Microsoft.
You bet.
And open, wow.
You bet.
That's pretty much what Microsoft is these days.
Open source love.
It is.
As opposed to open source love, which is a different kind of
right.
entirely.
Yeah, we're not talking about that here. Even though we were talking about health, we're not talking about that.
Ooh. Let's take a break. Back of the book coming up, and there's a new Foley in town. I'll show you that, too. But first, a word from Carbonite. Online backup done right. And you know, I was trying to decide or figure out if they do incremental backup, and then I realized, well, it doesn't really matter. You don't really care because it just happens. The nice thing about Carbonite, it's online backup that you don't have to think about. Now, I'm pretty sure they do incremental backup because that's one of the ways they could, you know, make sure that you use the minimum amount of bandwidth and they use the minimum amount of time to back up your data. Somehow, magically, in the background, they are always backing up. Whenever you're online, any changes, boom, they're backed up. And it's a great solution. And it's not just for Office, it's for home, too. It's for Mac as well as PC. In fact, if you go to carbonite.com, you can read up all about it and try it free without a credit card. So it's free, as in they couldn't even charge you if they wanted to. Carbonite.com. If you go to the business side on Carbonite, they have a bunch of resources about backup strategies and so forth. Even if you don't become a subscriber, you might want to read those, including how to mitigate ransomware or how to prevent it with Carbonite online backup. See, versioning is the key. You don't have to worry about ransomware. Every time I see, and it happens more and more these days, a company or a business or a government office shut down by ransomware. Los Angeles Valley College paid $28,000 to ransomware thieves a couple of weeks ago. And I think, you didn't have backup? What were you thinking? They even have hardware devices that back up locally and to Carbonite. You can find out more at carbonite.com. And if you decide to try it free, do me a favor. Use the offer code Windows. You don't need a credit card, just the offer code Windows. That way you get 2 bonus months if you decide to buy. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with our good friends at Carbonite. It's Windows Weekly. Paul Thorat, Mary Jo Foley, and the back of the book is here. That means it's time for Paul to kick things off with his tip of the week.
What is my tip of the week? Oh, yes.
You want me to do it for you?
Would you?
How to choose whether to sign into Windows 10 with an MSA. Maybe you better do this. I don't even know what MSA is.
It's a new type of Microsoft accreditation. No, a Microsoft account or an MSA.
I get it.
Yeah, I've been thinking and working a lot with Microsoft accounts and trying to understand how they, you know, interact with the different devices you use and so forth. And of course, I'm updating the Windows 10 book too, and I'm trying to have some basic advice around that kind of stuff. And for myself, I actually no longer sign into Windows 10 with a Microsoft account, but there are a couple of reasons why you might want to do so in order of my own kind of perceived importance. The most important reason to do it is for the settings sync stuff, right? If you have a favorite picture on your wall, you know, wallpaper, desktop wallpaper, whatever, your language preferences, all that kind of, you know, color schemes and so forth, that stuff will sync automatically. So if you sign in with your MSA, you'll get that on each one of your computers. But I don't actually find that to be a very compelling thing to do, frankly, even though I use a lot of different computers. And so for me, that's not a big deal. That might be a big deal for some people. The second big reason to do it is just for general convenience, because when you sign in with a Microsoft account, that account is applied to all of the apps that come bundled with Windows 10. And so when you run them for the first time, that sign-in is passed through to the app. So if you have a Groove Music Pass, for example, and you launch Groove, it's all configured automatically for you. You don't have to sign in separately in that app. You know, OneDrive works like this, the movies and TV app, Edge, all that kind of stuff. Edge is kind of a special case because if you do use Edge and you're serious about using Edge, you pretty much do have to sign in with a Microsoft account, because Edge is unique among all of the UWP apps that are built into Windows in that you cannot sign into Edge separately. So, for example, if you wanted to sign into Windows with a local account, but then handpick the, you know, the two or three apps you use and just sign into those manually, which you can do, and which I do, you can't do that with Edge. So if you want Edge's syncing functionality, that actually goes through the OS, and it's got that same kind of underlying OS integration that Internet Explorer used to have. So if you do use Edge, you pretty much have to sign in with a Microsoft account. But I mean, especially for people who are like concerned about privacy, that kind of stuff, I mean, they really haven't made a very compelling case for signing into the OS with a Microsoft account, in my opinion. And the number of things you can do without the Microsoft account has actually gone up, you know, since the Windows 8 first came out.
It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I just don't see the point, personally. But
yeah,
okay. And then for Epix, I actually have a bunch, but I have two for the desktop, which is very unusual, and it's been a long, long time. And both of them come from reader emails, and they're in response to either things I was talking about, say, on a podcast like this, or something I had written in an article. The first one is one I've used in the past. It's called Sizer. And Sizer is a little tray utility that runs. What it lets you do is a keyboard combination. By default, it's like Control Windows key plus Z over any running window. And then you can set its size and position on the screen. And so this is really useful for people like me who do like screenshots for books or websites where I want this window to be exactly 1080p or whatever. That's cool. But it's also really useful for people who use multiple monitors, or in my case, I'm using like this kind of panoramic single 34-inch widescreen display, where you can position apps exactly where you want them and have them always launch there in the exact same size. It's kind of a cool utility. It's free. And it is, let's see if I can quickly, it's bryansapps.net/sizer. The other one, I was writing about scanning in old photos, and I think I might have even had a tip about this on Windows Weekly a few weeks back. One of the issues with scanning in old photos is that they're not tagged correctly with the date. So if you have like photos from 1988, they're going to be tagged with the date you scanned them in on, which is not great, especially with cloud services where you can really easily find things by date. And so I still use Windows Photo Gallery for this, but Windows Photo Gallery is going away. It's not supported anymore. It could disappear at any time. And I've been looking around trying to find a good third-party app that just did this one thing, because what I want to do is not just tag a photo, but batch tag photos. And I really haven't found anything I like, but LNG sent this via email. It's called EXIF Date Changer, and it is basically what I'm looking for. It allows you to multi-select files in like a folder or whatever, and then apply the same date taken tag and other tags too, but specifically date taken. And that's exactly what I'm looking for. So it's free. It works nicely. It does do batch processing. That's something to look at. And it just as kind of a throwaway, I wanted to also mention that Skype Preview is available for Android now if you want it. If you're on Android, you can get that. This is basically a pre-release version of the new Skype client for mobile. It's a lot like Skype Preview as we see it on, you know, Windows 10 today. And it has some features that are not available yet in the the standard Skype client, as well as kind of a new look UI, which I really like. If you're on iOS, it's sort of available. It's actually a kind of a closed beta, and what you have to do is apply. And so I have a link to that on my.
What's the preview of? What is like a
of the? It's the next generation Skype client. Okay.
Is it a big difference?
Yeah, visually it's just prettier. And then functionally, off the top of my head, I don't even remember, but let me look. Look at my own article. I don't really know.
Care.
I'm just
making a conversation at this point.
It's got stuff in it. And I don't know. Yeah. I'm not big on Skype.
We're not exactly avid Skype fans, even though we use it all the time.
Yeah, and on mobile, I'm certainly not reaching for like the emoticons and stuff. So, for example, if I'm out in the world with a phone, I'm typing on Skype. That's what I use it for. So I use most of my Skype usage may be these podcasts, right? But aside from
the
podcast,
messaging a lot, huh?
That's what I
Interesting.
It's just a text messaging app. Yeah. That's for me.
Mary Jo Foley has our enterprise pick of the week, and I'm really curious what you're going to say. I mean, are you picking the Windows update? Or?
So the pick of the week is an update on what happened with Patch Tuesday, because last week when we were doing the show, we had talked about February Patch Tuesday had been canceled abruptly with no reason given. And then Wednesday night, Microsoft announced very late on Wednesday night that, guess what? We're going to not do Patch Tuesday until the next Patch Tuesday, which is Tuesday, March 14th. So some of us have been thinking they might postpone the February Patch Tuesday by a day or a week, but instead they're postponing it by a month. And again, they wouldn't say what happened or why they had this issue. My sources, as I said last week, are saying it was an issue with their patch build system that they had inside the company, and that's why they did not issue a patch. I saw some people saying that they thought it was because Microsoft rolling up patches, that this broke something. I don't think it was that. But again, they won't comment and say what happened. They did yesterday do the flash patches for Adobe. But otherwise, they're saying nothing till next Patch Tuesday. The other reason I wanted to make this the pick is I've been seeing on Twitter some people saying maybe this is the end of Patch Tuesday and they just don't want to tell us. No, that is not the case. Microsoft's going to keep issuing security updates on the second Tuesday of the month for Windows 7 and 8, and cumulative updates for Windows 10 that include both features and security updates on the second Tuesday of the month. That is not going to change from anything I've heard. So don't be fooled. Patch Tuesday is not going away. Sad to say it,
it's on a hiatus, a vacation.
It's on a one-month vacation. Yeah. And, people are concerned. People are concerned because there are two zero-day exploits out there that did not get patched this month. It's a big deal. Yeah.
Right. And for more information on those, listen to Security Now.
Oh, yeah. I bet he had a lot to say about that.
Oh, yes. Code name of the week.
Code name pick of the week is something called Project... I don't know how you pronounce this exactly. Sangam? I would guess.
Yeah, Sangam. Yeah.
Okay. So Project Sangam has to do with an announcement Microsoft made last night, which is they are building a light version of Skype just for the Indian market to work well on 2G networks. So they talked about the new Skype Lite, but in the context of talking about that, they also said they're doing work with LinkedIn, and they're going to integrate LinkedIn and Skype Lite to this centralized database in India called Aadhaar, I think, Aadhaar, which is like a biometric authentication database so that people can verify their identity when they're Skyping with someone. Like, say you're doing a job interview with somebody and they want to make sure you are really who you say you are over Skype. So you're going to be able to automatically authenticate. And what Project Sangam is the LinkedIn integration with Aadhaar. So why did they call it Sangam? Good question. Sangam has a lot of different meanings. I was looking up Sangam today, and it's a lot of different meanings in India. There's Sangam literature. There's the Sangam period. There's even a Bollywood movie that was called Sangam, I believe. So take your pick. I don't know why they called this project Sangam, but there you have it.
It means something.
It means something.
I believe it's pronounced S-Angam.
S-Angam, like P-interest?
I noticed, yeah. By the way, with P-interest, that Paul offers on his site to let you share to P-interest.
Do I really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a big fan of that service.
I bet a lot of people share to P-interest, share the Thoreau.
I assume so.
I've right over there. Yep. I got something to share with you before the beer pick of the week. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what I'm talking about, Mary Jo.
What?
Foley as a service.
Oh, yeah. Oh. That was pretty cool, right?
It's an Azure-based FAS.
Yep.
Using Azure Functions, FAST creates a beer pick for you. You tweet to it, and I guess it gives you a tip. Or something. I don't know what it does, but
based on those top two tips, it's a pretty good service too.
Yeah, I'm liking it.
Right. So this was funny. A guy who I know, I forget his name on Twitter now, DevLead, I believe.
Yeah.
He tweeted the other day, "Oh, I'm working on this FAS thing," and I said, "Oh, is that Foley as a service?" So then he went out and he built Foley as a service, which takes Azure Functions, integrates Amazing. Notepad, and makes a beer and draws from our database from Windows Weekly a beer pick of the week.
So that's why they're so good.
Right. So do anytime I tweet you tweet to it, that,
yeah.
Yeah. If you just tweet to the Foley as a service bot that's on Twitter, it'll send you, you can just say, hit me up with a beer pick and it'll just send you a beer pick.
Wow.
I see. He just was showing you how you use Azure Functions.
That's
and
nice.
couldn't resist throwing in Notepad, which was cool.
Foley as a service.
I know. My life is complete. I have my own bot that's beer picks.
I think so. That's pretty awesome.
It is.
At Foley as a service on Twitter. But let's let the human do a pick.
Wait until you get your first bill from Windows Azure. Microsoft.
I know, right? Yeah, I'll be like, wait, am I subscribed to Azure? my beer pick this week is in honor of New York City Craft Beer Week, which kicks off on Friday.
Oh, nice.
And so if you're in New York this coming week, you're just going to have a million amazing beer events that you can go to all the time. But
it's the New York City Fermentation Festival.
It's the most wonderful time.
It kind of is.
Rupert's Cup Awards.
So many things you can go to and so many great events. But I said, let me pick a New York beer to go for New York Beer Week. So one of my favorite brewers in New York is called Grimm. G-R-I-M-M. They are a husband and wife couple who were artists and then became home brewers and now are professional brewers. And they're seen as one of the best breweries in New York City.
Wow, that's cool.
They have so many cool beers, very one-off type things. And I picked a very unusual one from them. It's called Sugar Maker as the beer pick. So this is an imperial stout that made with vanilla and maple syrup. And what's interesting about it is it's somewhat sweet, but you really taste the maple syrup, which is really nice.
Mm. And it says serve in a snifter.
Yes.
That's amazing.
I know, which is scary because it's an 11.5% beer. If you drank a snifter of that, you might be pretty done for the
night.
And
I would be. Plus, it's a meal's worth of calories.
I know. It's so high in calories. It's like 400 calories almost for
like a Starbucks drink.
Mm. It kind of is. But if you want to have an amazing dessert drink, I would recommend it highly. Or anything, if you're in New York this week and going to Craft Beer Week, anything from Grimm is always a really great and delicious bet. So that's my pick.
That's cool. I don't know that I've heard of Grimm.
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. They're kind of a cult brewery here. They're hard to, like, it's hard to get them outside of New York. Right. But they're really, if you're here, they're worth trying. They do a lot of sours. They do a lot of IPAs. They do stouts. They do pretty much every style.
Nice.
Next time you're here.
I'll probably come back.
You might come back.
You never know.
Yeah.
Well, if you do it on a Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific. That'd be good. 2 p.m. your time. 1900 UTC. That way we can all be together at the same time.
Sure. Using maybe Skype. At the Microsoft store.
Yeah. Are you going there sometime soon?
We have no exact plans, but yeah, we will do that this year. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's sad, though. It's so close to Trump Tower. It might be a little more challenging.
Might be hard to get there. Yeah.
You know, it's like when you're walking up Mount Doom and the ring is just kind of weighing you down.
Yeah, each step you get
gets harder and harder and the closer you get.
Yeah, yeah. And the eye of Sauron up there at the top looking yeah. down on you. Yeah. Next time, take the Eagles. That's my suggestion.
Exactly. Short circuit the entire
faster.
Story.
Yeah. Windows Weekly is not only live on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific. You can watch us make the show if you want. Tune in at twit.tv/live, youtube.com/twit. Twitch has us, Ustream as well. But you don't have to watch live because, of course, we make on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/ww. You can also subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Couple more days left for our survey. We'd love to know more about people who listen to Windows Weekly. I want to make sure every show gets represented. It's just a quick 2 minutes. Mostly, it's not personal. We're not looking for your information particularly.
I think I'm going to see what the EU thinks about this, Leo.
we just want to know who's listening so that we can serve you better and
what
serve
else you better
you
want to know,
ads.
Leo?
You want to know, number, are you a man or a woman, Paul?
The first name of your first girlfriend.
What kind of business?
I want to know your favorite beer.
We should ask that next year. We might put that in. We did pare it down a little bit because people were complaining about the length last year. So just the stuff we really need to know. So when advertisers say, well, who listens? We could say, well, it's 95% men in their basements. That kind of thing.
Yep.
Yep.
Huh. Sounds about right.
After all our television data, what we found out was.
No, of course not. Let's see, what else? We have a new Twit store, and the Twit caps are in with the Twit logo or twit.tv, the words. We have flat brim, snap brim, or a curve brim for people of Paul's vintage. If you want to go to the store and visit, we also have T-shirts and mugs, and that's all online at twit.tv/store. Easy to remember. Survey for the survey, store for the store. I guess, is that, I feel like there's more, but I know. A palpable plug. Mary Jo Foley is on her ZDNet blog, all about Microsoft.com. You want to check that out each and every day for great scoops. And over there at Therat.com, Paul and company, including Brad Sams, are putting up good stuff. And scoops and stuff all the time. THURO.com. And he's at Therat on the Twitter. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.